Live from Discord, it is Podzilla After Dark here on the Podzilla 1985 Network. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Good evening. My name is Shannon Young. I'm going to be your host tonight. It is kind of a somber night. It was unexpectedly turned into a somber night. We will talk about that here in a second. Before we do that, though, let me introduce the cast for the evening. Of course, we have the co-host of After Dark, Mr. Jesse Kimble.
Oh, hey, that's me.
Yeah? With Phantom Cat behind him. May or may not actually be a cat. We're not sure. Lindsay. The Staria with two R's.
Stupid wow.
And of course, wow, Double H. Think?
Follow the buzzards, motherfucker.
Yeah. Not here with us tonight is Shelby. That's because of the top five that we have tonight. It was supposed to be a joyous night. We were going to... I'll say it now. The top five for tonight is the top five Super Nintendo games because the Super Nintendo launched in, what was it, 1991 on August 23rd, so yesterday, many, many years ago. And we were going to celebrate it tonight. It was going to be a fantastic thing, and it is still going to be a fantastic thing, but I think we need to talk about at the beginning of the show. Last night, if you missed a great episode we did about Barbie on Extras and Epilogues with myself, actually three of us here, minus Jesse, but add Ethan to it. And during that show, Hunter, we mentioned that tonight we would mention a little bit more about the unfortunate passing of wrestling legend Terry Funk.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, well, that was the plan.
That was the
and
plan.
Now you have more bad news.
Yeah, and what is absolutely just a gut punch. I mean, absolutely heartbreaking. We found out of just a few hours ago that Bray Wyatt has passed away at age 36. That one hurts a lot. They all hurt. Don't get me wrong. I mean, since we've been started doing this podcast, we've unfortunately had to cover the deaths of a lot of wrestlers. Roddy Piper, Dusty Rhodes. I mean, it just kind of goes on and on and on. The only
it's also different when... Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. Do your thing.
No, I think I was going to say the same thing you were going to say. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, it is just a little bit of a bummer that in most of those situations where you talk about, those were... important like aspects of wrestling, like through your youth, and they were important characters to you. But like they were well past their prime, like they were retired, like they
were older.
In a lot of cases, yeah. Like it was expected,
right?
And then Bray Wyatt though is just like that's wild.
Yeah, again, yeah. Terry Funk was almost 80.
Yeah,
he was 79 years old. He was suffering from both Parkinson's and dementia.
Yeah.
At the same time, you know, talk about suffering. That's fucking suffering right there.
Yeah. Absolutely terrible.
So while it sucks to see him go, like I don't want to compare him to a dog. Don't get me wrong.
Better
place. It's the same way that we think about Parker.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got to be better off now,
right,
than he was in those moments.
Yeah.
But Bray Wyatt, man.
Bray Wyatt, only 36 years old, and normally whenever a celebrity passes away, I have this thing where I immediately remember the person for their talent and what they've done. So, when Lance Reddick passed away, I was a big Lance Reddick fan. It was very unfortunate. Michael Williams when he passed away. All these great actors, these great wrestlers, and the first thing I think of is what they did, the movies, the matches, stuff like that. But the first thing I thought of when I had read that Bray Wyatt had passed away was the first thing I thought about was he has four children, four young children. That is now, going to be without a father. And maybe I'm getting a little bit older. I know I am. Where things like that suddenly become way more important to me than they were before. And, it sucks that Bray Wyatt, the wrestler, is gone. Because he was such a fantastic wrestler. And he was so good at what he did. And even though not everything he did landed. And I've criticized some of the things that he had come up with in the past. I mean, everything's open up to criticism. But the important thing is that the man... is gone, and his wife is now without her husband, and his children are now without their father, and that is so incredibly sad. And the fact that he was 36 years old, a lot of people are wondering how he passed away. I think we can say on the air now, at least the going theory, because everybody had their fears, dying at 36. Bray had been off of wrestling for months now, because Hunter, I think the last match he had was that admittedly terrible
Royal Rumble
Mountain
January.
Dew match. Yeah.
Yeah, with LA Knight.
Yep, and he hadn't been seen since. And everyone kind of went, "Oh man, you know, the Uncle Howdy thing's kind of stupid. What's going on? This isn't great. He's off TV. There must be some kind of, you know, disagreement with creative. And we even talked about that on PW, that the potential disagreement between, you know, Triple H and Bray Wyatt, maybe Bray Wyatt does need a Vince McMahon to kind of reel him in and stop him from going out there and doing crazy things. But then we found out that he had been battling an illness. And apparently the illness was very bad, although they never said what it was. Well, Sean Ross Sapp from Fightful revealed just not too long ago, and I sent this to Hunter specifically, that he had contracted COVID. And the COVID itself isn't what killed him, but it made a heart condition that he had worse, and he passed away from a heart attack today. So that is also heartbreaking. And it's just terrible all around. And I really, really liked Bray Wyatt. I really did. I know a lot of people are incredibly inspired by him. He was very imaginative. I think his Firefly Funhouse was one of the best things I'd ever seen in wrestling. I thought The Fiend was a fantastic character. I thought his work as the cult leader, Bray Wyatt, was amazing. The cult, the Wyatt family was great. And it's also worth mentioning, and this is another staggering, I mean, Hunter, I know you know, I don't know if Jesse knows, but of the three members of the original Wyatt family, there's only one left. Luke Harper, who was Brody Lee in AEW, passed away a few years ago, also incredibly young, from a mysterious illness that they think was COVID. So it's just a kick in the teeth after a punch to the gut that this has happened. And of course, I didn't know Bray Wyatt. We never got to work with him. I've worked with a lot of fantastic wrestlers. I've met a lot of fantastic wrestlers. I never got to work with Bray Wyatt, but I always thought he was just amazing, both in the ring and his mind for the business and his mind for creativity. He wrote his storylines like a horror movie. And as somebody that loves horror, I absolutely loved and respected that. So I feel bad that this, it almost like this has overshadowed the passing of Terry Funk. But like you said, Hunter, when you're 79 years old, suffering from dementia, suffering from Parkinson's, there is
a
difference.
At least he's not suffering anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
There is a difference. I'm sad about both of them, but the Bray Wyatt death, it really did gut me. I had tears in my eyes at the store, I'm not ashamed to say. Not because the wrestler was gone, but again, because the man was gone, and now his kids don't have a father. It's just a horrible day for professional wrestling and for people in general. So I know it's kind of a downer to start the show on that note, when we are going to try to have fun tonight. We are going to try to liven up your spirits a little bit, but I would feel bad if we didn't start the show off with that and talk a little bit about it. And Hunter, if you have anything to add to this, I will let you know, and then we will move on to the show at large.
I think you covered it pretty well. I do want to really emphasize that, like, yeah, admittedly, there were times, especially on PW, that we were, you know, critical of what was going on with Bray Wyatt in terms of his story. The guy himself, though, we never got a chance to say this because it was always the ups and downs. What's going to happen next? Where is this going? You can't say that Bray Wyatt didn't put it all out there.
Right.
There are a lot of guys who come into that business and have very little to do with who their characters are, or pretty much come up with one idea and let whoever's in charge run with it from that point forward. Bray Wyatt was that guy who was going, not only do I not want notes, I want to do it all. Let me do it top to bottom. And, you know, to varying degrees of success, that's what he did.
Right.
Again, he literally put himself out there every week that he was on television, and while every wrestler is doing that with their body, this guy was doing it with his mind as well.
Yeah.
That's almost unprecedented.
Yeah.
There are very few people who come into the world of professional wrestling and get an opportunity to not go out and perform exclusively just athletically, but also creatively the way that he did. And yeah, like you said, sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. Sometimes people generally agree that it worked, sometimes it was mixed results. But it was just so unique and so different. He was such a different guy from anybody we'd seen before. There were so many constant comparisons to The Undertaker and all these other, you know, sort of traditionally spooky characters. That wasn't Bray Wyatt. It was always something different from him. Yeah. And I can't act like, even though, you know, I think you'll agree, you and I both were a little frustrated as the most recent incarnation of what he was doing was kind of tapering off and petering out. I still wanted to know what was next. Every time that he went away, I would go, okay, well, I don't know how much I thought about that or what I liked about it, but what's coming after that?
What's going to happen? Right.
What's he going to do next time?
Yeah.
That was, I mean, there were weeks that went by on PW where all we talked about to some degree for the first 20, 30 minutes of the show were, okay, well, I don't know what this means, but it can mean this, 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 or this. And then it was the one we didn't even think of was what happened the next week.
Yeah.
It's just so incredibly creative on his part. Again, whether it always worked or not, to put yourself out there like that is the kind of thing that allows you to leave a legacy. So many people talk about what that means and who you're going to be after you're gone. I think that it would be foolish to suggest that Bray Wyatt didn't leave a legacy in professional wrestling that's going to be there for a long time. He didn't carry a lot of titles. He spent his whole career in one company, but he did a lot of stuff that nobody else has done or likely ever will do again now.
No, everyone says there will never be another Bray Wyatt, and that's absolutely true. I maintain, if you've never seen it, go back and watch the Firefly Funhouse stuff especially, because when the Firefly Funhouse was good, it was fucking amazing. And I always regretted that, you know, I heard rumor around the old wrestling mill that the original idea for the Firefly Funhouse was that it was symbolism for PTSD. That the Fiend was basically what protected him, because he had PTSD, and I love that so much. And the whole concept of the Funhouse and the Fiend to me is one of the great, I don't want to say wasted opportunities, because they clearly did something great with it. We wouldn't be sitting here talking about Bray Wyatt like this if they hadn't done something great with him. But there was so much potential for more, and I am sad, not just because of the family. That is the most important thing, that the man is gone. But the loss of what could have been in the world of professional wrestling is also, you know, staggering. It's just a huge loss all around. And again, if you haven't, go back, watch some Firefly Funhouse. It was good. It was really, really good. And he will definitely be missed. And like I said, this is just a very dark day in wrestling. It's not funny, but over the weekend, we had our most recent Cape Championship Wrestling show. And during this Cape Championship Wrestling show, the big finale was I myself took this giant beat down. I got beat with chairs. I got my leg broke, quote unquote, all these things. And I was so determined to keep up kayfabe and sell this thing. I haven't posted anything on social media, if you've noticed, in the past week. I haven't interacted with anybody on social media, so if you've messaged me, I apologize. But I was really trying to sell this thing. I really wanted to put this over as legit. But then something legitimate like this happens, and the first thing I wanted to do was I wanted to come out and say how sad I am about Bray Wyatt passing, because, I mean, it meant a lot to me. So it's tragic. And I'm paraphrasing here. There's a lot of tributes that have poured in from the wrestling community and people abroad, but my favorite one was Dustin Rhodes. He talked about being an uncle to the kids, and my favorite thing is he says, "I fucking hate death." And yeah, man, fucking amen, bro. Like, I get it's a part of life, but Jesus fucking Christ, what a fucking terrible thing it is to deal with death. And I hate it. It's the one thing I'm afraid of. It's the only thing I'm afraid of. And it's just fucking awful. But that's the sad part of the show. I promise we're not going to sit here for another 30 minutes doing this, because I'm gonna cry if we keep going. So let's switch gears. We got to switch gears, because this show, through all the terrible things that have happened in the past 8 years, and there's been a lot of terrible things that have happened through the past 8 years, one thing that you can count on is that Podzilla 1985 would be there to try and make you laugh. Do we succeed? More often than not, no. But we at least try. And we're going to try tonight to entertain you and try to make you feel a little bit better. Jesse, let's have a motherfucker of the week for you.
Oh boy, what you got?
I can't pronounce his name correctly, but I'm going to give it a try.
Oh, it's from the debate.
Does he deserve it?
He does, and he is. His name is Vivek.
No, I mean the name.
Vivek Ramaswamy. I think that's how you pronounce it.
I believe that's correct.
Vivek Ramaswamy.
I don't know this, so I can't help.
He was a nobody. He was a nobody. He was an entrepreneur. He was an author. He was a businessman that came up through the debate and kind of became kind of became the breakout star. Why was he the breakout star? Because he was just a Trump surrogate. I mean, this guy was all over it, supporting Trump and talking about he wanted to put down a blanket pardon now. He wanted them to swear to pardon Trump no matter what happened right then, before any of the facts were presented, before any of the trials, before any of that happened. He wanted to pardon Trump then and there. And worse than Vivek Ramaswamy was that fucking crowd. Because anytime someone mentioned Trump, they cheered. If anyone criticized Trump, they booed him. Chris Christie almost got booed out of the building for not supporting pardoning Trump. And it just shows you how fucking divided and terrible this country is because of Donald fucking Trump. I can't believe this is still a thing in 2023. How many years have we been saying, I can't believe this fucking goblin, this suntanned monstrosity, this fake tan bitch, like in World of Warcraft, is still so popular and we're still talking about him.
But bitch wasn't tan. She was very pale.
She's very pale.
That debate, like, it's so fucked up that the most reasonable, acceptable-looking candidate they presented last night at that debate was Mike goddamn Pence.
Well, you know, like, I thought you were gonna say Doug Burgum. I was like, you go, Doug Burgum.
Why do the names keep getting weirder?
Cheese bro.
I legitimately think Pence was the most acceptable candidate presented last night, which is a real bummer for the Republican Party.
Well, it's I think it was Joe Scarborough, you know, from Morning Joe, I watch religiously, and he I don't think it was him. I think it was Ari Melber from coverage last night. He said what this basically equated to is dad was gone and the kids were out there arguing. That's what it was. If you think that any of these people have a chance against Donald Trump, you're out of your mind. Trump's up 30, 40 points on all these guys. It's not even a contest. They're just fighting for crumbs at this point. And the one that was the most successful was the one that tried to emulate Trump the most. It's sad. Go ahead.
I was going to say, but if Trump goes to jail, which he almost certainly won't, but if he does, then yeah, we've got one of these people.
But who would it be? Well, the person in second place right now is Ron DeSantis, and DeSantis has my favorite moment of the debate. Did you see it? You know what I'm talking about?
No.
I saw nothing, because I didn't watch.
The best thing in the debate, and you can guarantee this is the thing that they are going to replay in all of the ads when they're going against DeSantis. This motherfucker, when they asked the panel, the potentials, as I call them now, suddenly, if Trump is convicted, would you still support him? If he's convicted of these crimes, these heinous, treasonous crimes, would you still support him? Half the room raised their hand immediately, right? The ones on the left. So, I need names here. Tim Scott raised his hand. Vivek Ramaswamy raised his hand enthusiastically, immediately. Big smiles all over the place. Mike Pence raised his hand. The only two people that didn't raise their hand was Chris Christie and Asa Hutchinson, if I remember correctly. I know Chris Christie didn't. But the best part, and again, this is the part they're going to replay forever, is as everyone's raising their hand, fucking Ron DeSantis looks around at everyone else, and when he sees them raise their hand, he raises his hand. Spineless fucking coward.
That's good shit.
That was
so
good.
So he was that kid in class, right? When they're asking, you know, show of hands, how do you? And he's like surreptitiously trying to look out of the.
Yeah, that was me.
He wasn't paying attention. He's like, should I raise my hand right now?
It's the political version of lying on your resume. I know how to use Microsoft spreadsheets.
I did the Iggy.
Not even a thing, now, Ron.
Oh, God damn it, Hunter. I need you to make a picture of Ron DeSantis that says, I did the Iggy. Because he
did the. All right, Shannon, you called the motherfucker of the week.
Yeah,
I need to know what exactly you're basing that on.
Oh, I just don't like him.
Oh,
that's
fair
it. He just annoyed the shit out of me.
So I put entrepreneur in air quotes. Do you know how he gained his fortune?
I actually do not, no.
So he would buy so he started buying a patent for a drug. I don't know if it was an Alzheimer's drug or something. Either way, like, had failed testing numerous times. He bought the patent for it, spun up this new company, raised a bunch of hype around it. The company became, like, went public with, like, him and seven other people. Like, two of those people were his siblings. The company became worth billions. He bought a bunch of more, like, failed patents, spun up a bunch of more companies, and all of these things would fail, and he would just sell off the company because, like, they were failed ideas. They were failed patents.
So he's that guy from Cape that keeps open the restaurants?
if you're talking about that doctor that was just trying to diversify his money so the government couldn't take it.
Yeah.
That's it. He did lose all that money.
Good.
But no, this guy just basically cheated his way to the top with what is effectively Ponzi schemes.
Well, if you can't beat them, cheat them. You know?
And that's...
They lie, they cheat, and steal.
Cheatham was the name of the little dwarf.
The small
that
man
ended up the,
in WCW.
Yeah. I think dwarf is the proper term, isn't it?
Well, not with WCW, because they called him Cheatham the One-Eyed Midget.
God, yeah, they did.
His actual
they
name.
They did do that. That's true.
Jesse,
he's responsible for that coal miner's glove match.
He also, Jesse,
thanks,
you might not know,
Cheatham
the One-Eyed Midget planted a bomb on Davey Boy Smith and Sting's boat, which blew up and almost killed
did.
Him.
Yes, he did.
90s WCW was wild, boy. We haven't even talked about the fact that I believe now, I want to say Donald Trump's mugshot might be available at this point. Because he is.
Oh, it 100% is. Have you not seen it?
Oh, I'm seeing it right now for the first time.
It was trending on Twitter.
I was going to say, it's absolutely available.
He looks so mad.
He's a grumpy boy. He's having a bad time.
I love the fact that Trump declined to participate in the debate because he knew that him turning himself in would take the piss out of whatever they did last night. Trump, for all the bad things, man, he is a good piece of shit. He is... a five-star piece of shit, and he knows how to shit better than anybody else.
And it wasn't like he used to be one.
No,
he still is.
I can't lie. Like, I know that nobody has a chance in this field except for Trump or DeSantis, and if I have to pick between the two, I'm probably going to pick Trump. Because DeSantis is worse than Trump.
Because at least
Trump.
He's incompetent.
Right. I think DeSantis has proven himself to also be incompetent at this point. This motherfucker couldn't even raise his hand whenever they asked him a question. He had to read the room and see what they were thinking first. But yeah, if I had to pick, man, I'd pick Trump. And I definitely wouldn't pick Biden. So this is going to be this is going to be one sexy presidential election. Very
Shannon, I have a special delivery for you in the text only for babies, and I mean the timing couldn't have been better.
Well, I see my,
you asked and I answered.
I see my new cover photo. Hold on.
With the most quality browser-based MS Paint I could possibly put together.
That's okay though.
I mean,
because he did the Iggy.
I wish I could have gotten. I could have done a three comic panel where the first one's him looking to his left, then he looked to his right, then he says it. He's got to make sure that it's approved.
And it is now my cover photo. Thank you, Hunter.
He has to make sure everybody else also did the Iggy.
I do.
Or at least the majority.
He had to make sure that the Iggy was popular. If the Iggy wasn't popular, he wasn't going to do it. All right. let's stop these shenanigans. Gamescom is also happening right now. Really quick, before we get to the top five, so we are talking about the Super Nintendo. Jesse, anything from Gamescom so far that's caught your eye, or nothing? Nothing going so far.
No, I've not been paying attention. I'll be honest with you.
Thank you, Michaela Minton has already liked the cover photo. You can always count on Michaela.
For the record, I haven't seen shit about Gamescom yet. I'm going to go kind of glance at it while we're doing this, but I do want to pass on that I have a mini motherfucker of the week to throw in there, and it's okay. AI art once again taking the crown.
Did they make that DeSantis image?
No, but they did make that Fallout image. Did you see that shit?
Was that really AI art?
That's the rumor. So the image they shared for the Fallout TV show that's coming to Amazon in 2024 is a very classic, like, stylized Fallout image. But apparently the closer you look at it, the more obvious that it's not done by a human being. I'll see if I can find the article real quick.
Yes, but it is.
Oh, here it is. Oh, shit, that was super fast. I'll drop the link here in the text so you guys can check it out, and then I'll see if I can pull the image. Well, actually, you can see it right there. So if you look closely right out of the gate, the red car in the front appears to go both forward and backward.
I see that.
Yep, it's got two fronts.
Yep.
Yes, it very much does. The sidewalk apparently is exactly as wide as the street itself.
Yep.
If you look at the tree that is right beside the E at the very end of true, the word true, where dreams come true, that tree apparently just... The tree and the building are completely disjointed.
Yep.
So it just, the longer you look, there's apparently a woman that has like three legs somewhere in there. The cars just turn into mush in the background.
Oh, yeah, Hunter, look, the vault boy, his right hand that's behind his back. Look at the woman behind it. Three legs.
There it is.
Well, they are mutated, so, Hunter.
It's one image. Again, you couldn't hire one fucking artist for a single image? Is this where we're at this point? Like, give me a break.
That is super fucking disappointing. And I'd say I expect more from Fallout. Is Bethesda? It's Bethesda,
Amazon.
Right?
Amazon's the problem. Well, Bethesda is still definitely Amazon. Involved, but this is an Amazon television show. Right. Yeah, Bethesda's got to be involved somewhere because they license it to them, and I imagine they've got some consultants. But I guarantee you, this feels like a big Amazon move.
Yeah, and that's shitty. Thank you for bringing that to the class's attention. I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely unsurprising from Amazon as well.
Real quick, before we talk about Super Nintendo, congratulations to Barbie. Has passed the Super Mario Brothers as the top movie of 2023, and it's well-deserved. Look, I like the Mario Brothers film. Barbie is a million times better. It's just a good movie. So, well-deserved.
It is a legitimately good film.
Yeah. Jesse, I don't know if you listened to last night's show. Pretend that you did. We all gave Barbie two thumbs up enthusiastically. So it was amazing. Fantastic. All right. With that said, let's talk about the Super Nintendo. Super Nintendo is my absolute favorite video game system of all time. It's not even a contest. I grew up with the original Nintendo when I was a wee one, but Super Nintendo was really when I sank my teeth into video games. There are so many good games for it. It released in 1991, August 23rd. We're going to talk about it tonight, our favorite Super Nintendo games, and this was a hard pick. Jesse, myself, and Hunter all have huge, throbbing lists of games that we could mention.
Bulging lists.
So,
they're bursting at the seams.
A list that'll make you go ooh, and request an AI art image of Discharge. Now, I'm not going to say what kind of Discharge it is. So, really quick before we get into it, what is the bet on how far we get into the list before Tanner pops in and wants to take part?
What time is it? 9:10? Yeah, I'm going to say two rounds because this is probably going to be about 9:30, 9:45.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, so we'll see where that goes. Again, we're talking tonight about our top five Super Nintendo games. Super Nintendo, the best system of all time. Nintendo struck gold with it. They then followed that up with the Nintendo 64. Unfortunately for Nintendo, around that same time is when the PlayStation came out, and then the Xbox was on the horizon, and Nintendo went through a long period of just kind of being there. The 64 was good, but it was kind of overshadowed. The GameCube was good. Also overshadowed. Nintendo wouldn't find success again until the Wii, which was a monster success, even though creatively it may have been a little bankrupt. The Wii U was a horrible failure, and then the Switch is the greatest thing since sliced bread. But tonight we're talking about the Super Nintendo, or the Super Famicom, if you're some of our friends from the East. So, let's start with Jesse Kimball. Jesse, what is, and these are in no particular order, I assume, mine or not, but we'll start with you. Tell us about one of your favorite Super Nintendo games.
Okay. Also, I did love the Nintendo 64. I had it over a PlayStation, just for the record.
I did not, and for one reason. Can I just tell you what that reason is real quick?
What you got?
Symphony of the Night. Castlevania Symphony of the Night, because on the 64, we had Castlevania 64. The two shall not be compared.
Hey, it's Resident Evil for me.
Was pretty bad.
You had Resident Evil 2 on both systems, but the N64 version does not count.
That's fair. Yeah. Anyway, Super Nintendo, though. That's what we're going to talk about. I've got a whole bunch of games, though. I will say, similar to Shannon, I did have an NES when I was really, really little, but I was way too little to actually enjoy it. So more comparative to me would be the Super Nintendo to the N64. I have more fond memories of the N64, despite my massive list of Super Nintendo titles here. So I'm going to kick it off with one that I'm going to steal from Shannon. Rock and Roll Racing.
Fuck, that was my number one, you motherfucker. I've got to stop going to you first. Why have I not learned my lesson in 8 years? God damn you.
So, I mean, like, Rock and Roll Racing was one of, like, the very important games to us as kids. So my little brother and I grew up with two brothers. My little brother and I were the ones that fought the most over who got to play. I mean, we were very, very close in age. Any game that we rented from next door, because we were too broke to buy games, had to be a multiplayer game. And this is one of those games that we may as well have bought it because we rented it so often.
Oh, baby.
It was so much fun.
Oh, baby.
So good. This is one of those old track style racing games. There were upgrades that you could get, like it was in space. The soundtrack was all actual songs, but chip tuned. It was so good.
I'll never forget.
Also made by OG Blizzard.
OG Blizzard, back when they were called, what was it, Synapse? I'll have to look it up because they had a name before they were Blizzard.
They did, but I don't think that sounds right.
I'll never forget booting up Rock and Roll Racing for the first time and just hearing that durner 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 wow wow wow. I didn't know what it was at the time, but I just remember thinking, "Oh my god, this is fantastic!" It's the first video game I can remember that had licensed music, and it was just fantastic.
You had half of it. They were called Silicon and Synapse.
There it is. There it is. Yep. Because it was a little brain, right?
Because it's not familiar. But
was it like a little brain?
I'm not seeing the logo, but I'm gonna find out.
Okay. Yeah, I don't want to steal Jesse's thunder here because it was my number one pick, too, bastard.
You can by all means add to it because
it's a little brain that looks like he stole his fit from Cool Spot because he's got the big shoes and the sunglasses.
Yep.
Yeah.
This was such a good game. Multiple tracks. It had so much style. It was kind of like Twisted Metal, where not only was it a racer, but you could also get weapons. You could shoot rockets at people. You could mines you could lay down. It was infinitely replayable, and it was so good. And it even had a couple of guest appearances. The Lost Vikings were in it. And it was very, very cool. The Lost Vikings were another Blizzard property.
Another early Blizzard, yeah.
Yeah. It's just such a good game. It's one of my absolute favorite Super Nintendo games, and if you've never played it before, you owe yourself to do it. Genesis also had it, but the Genesis version, not nearly as good. The sound quality wasn't as good. Genesis didn't have quite as good.
They ported to GBA as well, didn't they?
They did, yeah. Yeah, and they even tried to make a new version of it, but it wasn't by Blizzard. Another company took it upon themselves to create a game. I forget what it was called, but it was basically Rock and Roll Racing. They had licensed rock music, and I don't know if Blizzard shut them down or what. It was on sale on Steam, and I don't think it is anymore. So something happened there. I don't know what it was. But 100%, I am backing Jesse Kimball on this one. He gets my seal of approval. That is an amazing fucking game. So
yes,
Hunter, let's take it over to you.
All right, I'm not going to pretend like I've picked a bunch of more obscure games because, frankly, as I told you guys before we started this, I got my SNES very late in its life cycle, basically in the last year. So it's that thing where you get the console late and then you buy all the greatest hits, basically, right afterward. So I'm going to start with legitimately one of my all-time favorite games and a strong contender for maybe my favorite game of all time, and that's The Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
No surprises there, man. Yep. For many, many years, because I grew up with the N64 when I was a teenager, I thought Ocarina of Time was the best Zelda game. And there's a strong case to be made for that, too. But A Link to the Past is the only one of those games, and those games used to be the absolute pinnacle of video games for me. It's the only one that I have played through multiple times and never once gotten bored. Never once felt like, I don't know why I'm doing this. Why am I playing this game again? I wasn't playing it through because I was bored. I was playing it through again because I desperately wanted to experience it over and over and over and over. So when I very first got my SNES, that was the only game I had from the get-go. And I probably, as great a system as it was, and I agree it might frankly be the best system of all time, I would have been content to just keep playing that game over and over again.
I got bored with that game, but it's because I didn't get to play it. I watched my best friend play it because it was her system, and she was on it while we were there. And so I was bored out of my mind when I wanted to play something we could both play, and instead I just sat there as she tried to kill a spider from underneath it.
It is not a multiplayer game, that's for sure.
That was the first Zelda game I ever fell in love with. I played the first one on Nintendo. I thought it was fine. I honestly wasn't super impressed by it. I actually liked Zelda 2 better than the first Zelda. I know I'm in the minority there. I loved Zelda 2. That was the first Zelda I ever played, and then I went back to play the original Zelda. But Link to the Past was the first Zelda I fell in love with, and I suck at Zelda. I only love two Zelda games, Link to the Past and Breath of the Wild. So I'm not the best person when it comes to Zelda, but I agree. This game was so good.
It was Ocarina, and we had to pick multiplayer games. By the time we had the N64, Ocarina of Time was the only game that like Jake and I could play in single player and agree to swap off.
See, I missed
because we just had so much fun playing it.
I missed out on the Zelda craze for 64 because I was too busy playing GoldenEye and WCW versus NWO Revenge. That's all I played all the time.
We also played a lot of the World Tour and Revenge.
Yeah. Amazing.
Man, so Link to the Past, Link's Awakening on the Game Boy, and then Ocarina of Time, that's the 1-2-3 TKO for me. I mean, it just... Oh my God, they were so good.
Truly incredible games.
Yes. 100%. They also, this is kind of pointless, but just a little trivia. They also made a MMORPG based on the style of Link to the Past. I forget what it was called, but I really wanted to play it. It was an indie project. It looked exactly like Link to the Past. I thought it was cool. Never got to play it, and I don't think it exists anymore. But yeah, Link to the Past is fantastic. Lindsay, I'm going to let you go next because we're talking about Super Nintendo. So I feel like I should be the one to go last because it's like in my top five things that make me not die. It's one of them. So let's go to
That's fine. Well, I have said it before on the show, but I'm going to remind everyone I never got a Super Nintendo despite the fact that I asked for it year after year after year. So my playing it when it was the main console was at friends' houses or cousins' houses. So I had to make do with what little bit I had. But I'm going to start things off with Super Mario World because I played that on the demo system at Sears every time we went to the mall.
That's because it had Yoshi. You liked Yoshi.
Uh-huh. I did. I never got far in it because I suck at platformers because, again, I didn't have my own system. But I still enjoyed what little bit I did play.
At that time, this was before I really fell in love with like Castlevania and Final Fantasy and stuff like that. So Mario was my absolute favorite game of all time. And I remember playing Mario World. The first time I ever played it was at Pizza Hut in Charleston. They had one of those arcade machines with the giant Super Nintendo controller. I'll never forget. It had Super Mario World, ActRaiser, which is a fantastic game if you've never played it. It's not on my list, but it's fantastic. And like an NCAA game. Fell in love with it. My mom got me a Super Nintendo for Christmas one year. And me and my friend Jeff, who's currently not in jail, if I remember correctly, we played Super Mario World all the time. And it was mind-blowing how the jump from Mario 3 to Super Mario World was. The introduction of Yoshi, the legendary, and this is before the internet, you know, we grew up before the internet, finding Star Road for yourself and like those shortcuts made you feel like a badass. Yeah.
Super Mario World is, I maintain it's the best of the Mario platformers. I know a lot of people go back to Mario 3, but it's definitely my favorite. And I very much had it fairly high. I did actually do my list kind of in order, and I'm doing them best to like time, you know, 1 to 5 instead of 5 to 1. Mario World would have been 4 on that list. It maintained. This is my favorite story about that game, and I promise it won't take long. But it continues to be the only game that I have ever beaten while unaware that I was doing it, I guess, for lack of a better term. You guys remember at the last party we had here at the house where Asa just blew through Mega Man X and just kind of sat there and did it. I did that with Mario World on the Wii, one of the very few times that I don't remember what happened that night. the house that Matt Sissom and I rented. It had been made available on the virtual console. I also didn't even know I had purchased it until the next morning. But I had purchased it, and come to find out, I had found Star Road, and I had beaten the whole damn thing.
You know, Hunter, off topic.
That's another story for another time.
sort of off topic, but I found myself in an almost similar situation after a party at your house where I went home and bought the Mass Effect Legendary Edition the day it came out and didn't remember. Woke up the next day, and it was installed on my Xbox. What a surprise.
And how much have you played of that so far?
I started part one. That's it.
That's honestly further than I thought you were going to go.
True, yeah. I assumed it was... I didn't.
I've always wanted to play more Mass Effect, but I just... Oh, man. Games are demanding. All right. Let me get this one out of the way. Since Lindsay mentioned Super Mario World, I'm just going to say it. Super Mario All-Stars.
Yep.
I know it's a cliched, it's a cliched game because it's just Mario 1, 2, and 3 plus the Lost Levels, which was the Japanese version of Mario Bros.
You didn't have to put a different cartridge in.
Yeah, that...
You could just jump.
That game stayed in my Super Nintendo most of the time. Because Mario 3 is hands down my favorite game of all time. I've said that before. Mario Bros. 3, I think, is the best video game ever made. And I liked Mario 2. I love the original Mario Bros., obviously. And Mario All-Stars was just all of those games, but better graphics, better sound. It was incredible. And you got to play the Japanese version of Mario Bros. 2 for the first time, which I still really have. I have never beaten Mario 2, the Japanese version. I've beaten every other Mario game, but I've never beat that one. Because it's bullshit. It's bullshit. Yeah. And there's a reason that they never released it in America.
That's why they never
gave it. Oh my god. But yeah, Super Mario All-Stars is an insane value.
I kind of love that now we're getting all these compilations, like the Castlevania compilations and stuff, and people are like, wow, this is incredible. It's so many games. And Nintendo's like, we were doing this in the 90s with the best game series of all time.
Of all time.
This is not new. We originated that shit.
So yeah, Mario All-Stars. I won't spend a lot of time talking about it because you already know what Mario All-Stars is. Let's go back to Jesse.
Okay, that did remind me. You know, they were talking about their Super Nintendo experiences. I was gonna say I had a fun story of how we got ours. This will be pretty quick. My parents were huge nerds. That's why I had an NES before. Like, I gave a shit about video games. It got me into it. When we got the Super Nintendo, my mom was an area manager for a convenience store chain, and somebody had left just a bunch of scratchers on a table that they had gone through. So before she threw them away, my mom was like, eh, fuck it, I'll look through these. And there was one that either like wasn't completely scratched or the guy didn't notice as a winner. But it was like one of the, not the big, big winners, but it was like a $3,000 one.
So damn.
My parents took like, yeah. So and this was in, you know, the 90s. So my parents took a weekend trip out. You know, they had their little vacation where they spent the money and everything. They told us they were going to buy us a Super Nintendo. They came back and set it up with Mario. We knew they were coming, so the day before, my cousin, who was babysitting us, took us over to Showbiz to rent some games to play for it. very, very, very exciting time in young Jesse and Jake's lives. But anyway, so I'm going to go on to my next one here. I don't want to steal another one from Shannon.
I'll murder you, but go ahead. I've got plenty. Go ahead.
No, it's fine. I want to know
what it is now. I want to know what it is now. I so fucking
I'm
dare
do
you.
Spider-Man and Venom Maximum Carnage.
That's one of them. Let me mark it off the fucking list. So
this was a game, you know, like you're going to notice a pretty similar trend with some of these games here. Like if I read the entire list, a lot of them are these two-player side-scroll beat-em-up games. Hmm. The Super Nintendo was the fucking golden era of those like Double Dragon style, like 2D.
Final Fight.
Final Fight. Almost and then another couple of games.
We won't say because someone's definitely got it on their list. Yeah.
Yeah. So Spider-Man and Venom, though, like Jake and I both were really, really into Spider-Man. Also Batman. But this was another one of those games we didn't have to decide like who was first player, who was second player, because I wanted to be Venom, he wanted to be Spider-Man, and that game was just a dumb amount of fun. Just side-scroll, beat-em-up action, you sling it on webs and stuff, or in Venom's case, they did not give him web. For some reason, he was swinging on the symbiote.
Yes. Also, Jesse, important to note, who made that game?
I don't remember.
LJN.
Well, LJN.
Yeah,
I was going to say. I thought yep. so.
Which is notoriously one of the absolute worst video game companies of all time. But they really hit gold with this. It's based on one of the best comics of all time. I love Maximum Carnage. It had a soundtrack by Green Jelly. The soundtrack was awesome. There was all of these guest appearances by like the Fantastic Four and I think maybe even Black Cat. I don't know. I forget all the details. But it was just really fun. It was really good.
And it was really, really good, and it had a dope-ass red cartridge.
Yes, the red cartridge. Yeah. Oh, baby.
That was so cool.
I think that was only one of two red cartridges that ever were released, and the other was Doom, if I remember correctly.
Mortal Kombat, right?
Mortal Kombat had one, didn't it?
No, Kombat was always great.
Mortal Kombat had a black cartridge.
No, that was Killer Instinct.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Anyway. Yeah, I thought Spider-Man had been a Maximum Carnage.
Unfortunately,
followed
up by the less phenomenal Separation Anxiety. But that's a story for another time.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
Yeah.
Let's go to Hunter, who's researching this.
Yeah, I know. It's driving me crazy because I can picture it in my head. Did it maybe have a red... Was there a red Genesis Mortal Kombat? Man, that's going to drive me nuts.
I don't remember. I only remember Maximum Carnage, Doom, and then Killer Instinct had the black cartridge. And that's the only...
Those are right.
That's the only color... Because on Nintendo, you had Zelda was gold, obviously.
Zelda had a green cartridge.
Right.
That I don't know.
I'm not picking this as mine, but I'm gonna tack it on because there's no way anybody added it. If we're gonna talk about beat 'em ups, because I thought it was LJN and it's not. Did anybody ever play Death and Return of Superman on the SNES?
Yes.
That was actually surprisingly good. And believe it or not, developed by Blizzard.
Yep.
Yeah. Sunsoft published it, but it was developed by Blizzard.
That game was actually released as a direct response to from DC. To Spider-Man and Venom Maximum Carnage.
It's basically the same idea. Yep. You play Superman for a little bit, then he's dead. Then you can play as all those other idiots that tried to replace
those other fake
just
Superman.
Just like in the comics.
Yeah. The hard part about Superman, though, is as opposed to Maximum Carnage, because when you're Spider-Man or Venom, they're strong, but they're not like so strong that it's unbelievable. But with Superman, it's really hard to walk left to right beating up thugs as Superman. You know?
But it still was a fun game, and that's hard to say for any Superman game. So,
accurate.
I mean, it's kind of wins by default because most Superman games are so bad.
Lindsay, watch your back. Because that cat is definitely going to take that.
I'm watching it. I'm watching it happen, man.
She's
in
fine.
Real time.
downside to that game was that it wasn't multiplayer, and that was a huge bummer.
Yeah. See, I think that's why it didn't bother me so much, because I was the only child and playing these things alone. Actually, it was better for me because I didn't go, boy, I sure wish I had somebody to play this game with me. my actual choice is going to be legitimately probably not my first RPG, but definitely the one that I put the most time in and really solidified the genre for me. And Shannon thinks that I'm going to pick one from his list, but I don't think I am because he's thinking it's something else.
It's true.
It's Super Mario RPG, Legend of the Seven Stars.
I don't have that one on my list, but I love that game.
So this was the game that before I actually had an SNES, I'm sorry, I had the SNES, but I didn't have a whole lot of games for it. This was right around the time that, as I've mentioned before on the show, my parents were separated for about a year. While my mom and I were living in Cape with my aunt, I had my SNES, but I kind of just had the games I had, and of course we couldn't really afford anything extra, but we lived near a Blockbuster. At that point, we lived about two blocks away from a Blockbuster, as a matter of fact. So I rented a lot of stuff. This is where I first started playing that game of let's rent an RPG and hope I get the same cartridge next weekend
so I can keep
playing that save file.
Yeah.
I fully beat that game. I
hope nobody overwrote it.
I fully beat that game by renting it over the course of, I don't know, in total, maybe about a month. And then eventually I was able to get my own copy. And again, much like Legend of Zelda Link to the Past, one of the traits of a game that I truly love is that I will play it over and over again. I absolutely played through Mario RPG numerous times. I'm super excited about the remake or the remastering that they're doing for the Switch.
Yeah.
When they announced it as part of the SNES Classic, I was super excited because that's not something I thought would make it on there, since it's that partnership with Squaresoft at the time they were. I really didn't think we'd get that game on there, but not that I've ever sat down and played it again since, mainly just because I don't have time, but I absolutely would. It's just such a inventive, original, interesting game for something that could have been an easy cash in. I didn't really like a lot of the other Mario and Luigi RPGs. I loved this one. It just felt like a Final Fantasy game, but with Mario characters.
And it's
a blast.
When I first heard that Nintendo had teamed up with Square to make a Mario RPG, I remember thinking, like, well, that's never going to work. and then it worked.
It's kind of like when you first hear about Kingdom Hearts. It's like, Disney's doing a what now?
Right.
Okay. And then you play and go, wow, this is pretty great.
I have two things to say about
this. What the hell's going on?
One, it's funny that I can see Jesse's football game in the background reflected. I just think that's funny. That's very funny. And two,
and that cat is still going at it.
The cat's still going at it. And then there's the shell boo.
Jesse, the chick from the ring is there.
No, Hunter, that's the chick he gave a ring to. It's different.
Oh, okay.
Look at that monstrosity.
Oh, shit.
That's pretty incredible.
That's horrifying. So
that's
in
extremely
the best
horrifying.
Way.
Really quick, Lindsay, speaking of Mario RPG, did you know that Super Mario RPG is the first time I ever encountered Sailor Moon?
Yeah. No.
I have a story for that, and that is that I was emulating things at that time. I had never played them, or I hadn't played the Mario RPG in forever.
If this is where I think it's going, you're going to either need to wait, or you're going to force my hand on which game
I'm
I do
next.
I'm
forcing your hand, because I'm going to segue straight into it. But
fine.
I was downloading ROMs, because I was young, and I couldn't afford a lot of stuff on my own, but I wanted to play these old games. So I tried to find the Super Mario RPG. Well, I found a ROM that just said SMRPG, and I thought that was it. So I downloaded it and booted it up, and it was Sailor Moon, Another Story.
Another Story.
And I was like, what the fuck is this? This ain't Mario. This ain't funny. And I was like, this is the dumbest thing I'd ever seen. Little did I know that Sailor Moon would come to absolutely engulf my life in the next few years. With that said, let's turn it over to Lindsay.
Yep, Sailor Moon Another Story is on my list.
Yep.
I was introduced to ROMs in college, and one of the guys in our anime club helped a bunch of us install a whole bunch of them, and there was a bunch of anime ones in there, and sure enough, Another Story was one of the first ones on the list. Now, mind you, the copy of it I had was not translated at
same.
All.
Same.
So
played
it was
through it in Japanese.
All in Japanese. Yep. I had to figure it out and just kind of like do what I could. It wasn't until years later, I think you found me a translated version that I went through and played.
Yep.
And I just remember being so angry at the villain that was Sailor Mercury's counterpart, because it would take me forever to beat her, because whatever she did, like, nerfed all of your stuff to the point that you did one hit point of damage on her every single time, and she would get health back. And so I'm just sitting here for literally like 2 hours trying to beat this one villain in a turn-based RPG, to the point I quit playing for like a month and a half before I went back to it and finally beat the game.
Can't confirm, because I did the exact same thing. I remember hating that boss fight, and I almost quit because I was so frustrated with it. But I'm glad I didn't, because it was a really good RPG. I mean, and I'm not
It's a good story.
Yeah.
Once I got to actually know the story. But otherwise, like, I was literally going off of what I knew from Sailor Moon as far as, like, okay, I recognize this place. I recognize these villains. And just memorizing which kanji was what attack and what, like, healed and what gave buffs and whatnot. Just having to, like, trial and error.
And it wasn't just a good RPG because you like Sailor Moon. It was a legitimately good RPG. I mean, if you ask most people, they'll tell you it's one of the better RPGs on the system, because it had a great combat system, it had fusion attacks, it had a great story.
You could change your format of where your characters were. You could swap your characters out.
Yeah, it was.
I'm pretty sure I had multiple save files, so that, like, as I was doing my trial and error, I'd be like, okay, I'll move forward from this.
Yeah, it was a solid RPG. It was really, really good. For not even Sailor Moon lovers, just as RPGs. But speaking of RPGs, and this is the one, Hunter, I thought he was taken from me. I'm going to go and throw it out there before I get into the more obscure titles on my list. And that is the probably the greatest RPG of all time, hands down. And I don't even think I'm going to say Chrono Trigger. Chrono Trigger is actually not on my list, even though I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
It's Final Fantasy III. Final Fantasy III, also known as Final Fantasy VI in the East, is to me the pinnacle of RPG greatness. The story is amazing. The music especially. Oh my god. Final Fantasy.
Is it the one that the female's the lead with the green hair?
Yeah. Tara. Okay.
Yeah. Tara,
and Kefka's the bad guy. Kefka, which they basically just took Kefka and made him Sephiroth. I mean, it's almost the exact same final battle. Sephiroth just always got more credit because it was on the PlayStation. But hands down, Final Fantasy III, to me, is the best RPG. One of my favorite wrestlers is Chris Sabin. Chris Sabin got his name from Final Fantasy III. There are so many characters in Final Fantasy III that have lived on, and just the legacy is insane. Final Fantasy is a great series altogether. Final Fantasy II is really, really good. But Final Fantasy III is by far the absolute best. And again, I'm going to keep this short because everybody already knows about Final Fantasy III. We're going to go back to Jesse Kimball. But
I'm going to say one thing real quick before you move on from it. The main reason that I didn't add it, other than I knew you would, is that I didn't feel right about it. I actually never got a chance to play that game on the Super Nintendo. Oh, I played it almost exclusively on the Game Boy Advance. And so until it hit the classic, I didn't have a chance. Oh, yeah, that's what I kept hearing. I actually, well, I should say I had the Game Boy Advance cartridge. I played it on the second DS, the DS Lite, I think.
Right.
But I have very fond memories of living in Cape, getting out of college, and playing that game for hours while I was at the laundromat, just doing laundry, to the point that sometimes I have to go, oh, shit, I have to go. Like, they're closing. I should get moving.
My laundry has been done for a minute.
This is portable. I can take it with me.
It has my favorite RPG character of all time, and that is Edgar, who is the king of the Desert Kingdom, and Figaro, Edgar Figaro. And he is so funny. He's charming. He's a ladies' man. He's just amazing. That whole game is so good. It has my favorite scene in probably any video game ever. And once upon a time, I had a blog, and it was called Blogzilla 1985. And then I created a secondary blog called Mecha Blogzilla 1985. And I covered my top 10 RPG, like Final Fantasy moments of all time. And I believe number one was the opera scene from Final Fantasy III, where they have to fake this opera to trick this guy into coming down so they could steal his airship, basically Setzer, and it's just so good. And if you could ever find the song from that, I'm not even gonna try to pronounce the name of it because I believe it's Italian and I'll fuck it up. But the Super Nintendo version is really good, but they actually did make an arranged version of that entire basically opera, and it's amazing. It's what made me fall in love with opera music. So yeah, Final Fantasy III, Jesse.
It's a good game. All right, you mentioned the rest of your list is going to be kind of obscure, so I'm going to go ahead and burn this one then. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Turtles in Time.
Well, I said they were obscure, but let's delete that one.
I'm sorry, I thought you weren't going to mention that. I don't know why you wouldn't have, but you said obscure.
I mean, it's not like we have an arcade cabinet of it in the basement.
Well, yeah, I know. That's why I was surprised it wasn't like the first one you mentioned.
No, because the first one I was going to mention was Rock and Roll Racing, motherfucker. You stole that, too.
Then you could have taken Turtles in Time. I gave you another round.
Yeah.
Turtles in Time. That was another side-scroll beat-em-up, just ultra-fun game. Me and my little brother, huge Ninja Turtles fans as kids. This was perfect. We played through this game so many times. We actually did own this one. Our parents bought it for us. Because we could just wake up and we just play through fucking Turtles in Time, and we could be whatever, you know, we could be the turtles we wanted to be, just play through it. Soundtrack was great, level design was great, like
boss fight, it captured the cartoon so well, like it was the cartoon,
it really did.
Yeah, and when
such
I played it,
fun game.
I played it when I was younger, obviously, and I played it with Jeff. Obviously, because he was my best friend at the time. We had another friend named Jeremy that had come over and played with us. And I'll never forget, me and Jeremy were playing while Jeff was watching. And Jeremy said, it was on the pirate ship level. He was throwing people into the water. And he said, and he said it in this voice. I'm going to try to do it as best I can. Come on in, the water's fine. And Jeff immediately, yeah.
Even the cat didn't like that.
Jeff seized upon this, and the slurs that came out, I had to stop a fight from taking place.
Oh.
Yeah, it was bad. Anyway, let's move on. Hunter.
Okay.
Ninja Turtles.
One of the only, not that one, one of the only, I had a weird little phase where I really loved racing games. But it's not what you're thinking because it's Super Mario Kart. the original Mario Kart was one of those games that, yeah, was so much better with friends, like most Mario Kart games are. But again, I lived a pretty long distance away from most of my friends. I didn't have any siblings. So I got very, very good at time trials in those games. I don't know what I was so obsessed with, because again, I was at the late stage of the SNES cycle. I was still playing it even after I got, you know, a PlayStation and an N64. There were so many other things I could play, and even Mario 64, but I kept going back to this one for some reason, to the point that I had it just sort of half memorized. This is another one of those games that I can play when I'm not quite all there and still do very well, as you might recall from a couple other parties ago. I don't know what that muscle memory is, but it just sticks. But I loved that game. Subsequent Mario 64 Mario Karts have been not as kind to me. Like, the more stuff they add, the more I'm like, ah, man. But if I could just go back to that Mode 7 version and just play that over and over and over, that's where I was king.
Yeah.
Yes. The only thing that wasn't as good about that one, admittedly, was the battle mode. It's not as great in the original Mario Kart, but the actual racing, it was so tight and so quick. I fucking loved it, man.
Agreed. Lindsay.
Oh, it's my turn again?
Yep. That's how rotations work.
Kirby's Avalanche. Because I love puzzle games, and it's Kirby, and it's Puyo Pop. And I just like it. And there's squishy little jellies.
All right. Well,
what more can be said?
What more?
Ladies and gentlemen, she said it all. I'm sorry, because I suck at platformers. So my thing.
What else could be said about Kirby's Avalanche that hadn't been said about Afghanistan?
that's right. Kirby did the Iggy.
That's right. Lindsay did the Kirby.
Hey, all right, so I'm gonna oh, Lindsay lost her shit there. So this one's kind of a deep cut, but not really. I mean, it's not like it's an obscure property or anything, but this is probably one of my favorite games of all time, and I don't know how many people have played it, and if you've never played it, you need to. But it's Tiny Toon Adventures Buster Bust Loose on the Super Nintendo.
Yes.
All right, Shannon, you took one from me.
Thank God. What an amazing game. I played this game top to bottom. I was a huge Tiny Toon Adventures fan anyway. And it's like Ninja Turtles. This game was the cartoon. It looked like the cartoon. It had the music. The graphics were amazing. This was, and I've got another Looney Tunes game on here too, so hold on for it, because I actually went pretty hard on Looney Tunes on Super Nintendo. But yeah, Tiny Toon Adventures was amazing. There were so many different levels. Before I ever saw Star Wars, I played this game, and I think it's the last level is just Star Wars. It's like you literally, Plucky's Darth Vader, and you have to hide behind these walls while these Super Star Destroyers shoot at you. It's just Star Wars. And when I saw Star Wars, I went, oh, now I get the reference. I didn't get it at the time. Yeah, Tiny Toon Adventures, absolutely amazing.
You know what's weird? For a minute, I thought I played this game, and I didn't. Sorry, as you were talking about this, I thought, I definitely played this game, and I went to look. I didn't. I played Tiny Toon Adventures Buster's Hidden Treasure on the Sega Genesis, yep. Which is a different game. Yeah, similar, that's what you're talking about. I'm like, that sounds familiar, but it's not. It's a different game, and I don't think I ever played the SNES version.
So good.
Because this game, like, you look at it, and you're like, oh, this is a platformer. This was a Tiny Toons Metroidvania.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Like, it actually had, combat, special moves,
The run meter.
You could go through a backtrack. Yeah, you could backtrack.
Tried to
buy
it.
Stuff.
I failed.
Game was so cool. Like, I loved it as a kid because I love Tiny Toon Adventures, but I don't think we ever beat it. And then I went back and, played through it on an emulator because I was like, damn, I love this game. And I was like, holy shit, this game was so much better than I even realized as a kid.
Yeah, it still holds up. It still holds up. It's really, really fantastic. I beat it as a kid and just loved it. The only way that my mom could get me, I'll never forget, the only way she could get me to stop playing it, because she came in once, it was like Easter Sunday, and I'm playing it again. And she's like, you want to stop playing that for a little while? And I was like, no, I'm good over here. And she said, oh, yeah? Well, and she said, well, what if I show you this? And she busted out a copy, I'm not kidding, on VHS, of Scooby-Doo Meets Batman and Robin. And I went, oh! and I turned the game on. You got me. You got me.
On a totally unrelated note, I need you to go and check and see that your new friend has liked your cover picture.
Oh, yeah, I saw. I saw. I'm pretty sure she was AI generated, but it's okay. Let's go back to Jesse Kimball.
At the very least, her profile picture was.
She made that Fallout show.
She has three legs.
All right, I'm going to hit you guys with a fairly obscure one here. Knights of the Round.
Oh, not obscure to me, baby. I love that game.
Okay, good.
I've definitely heard of this, but I don't think I've ever played it.
Side-scrolling, beat-em-up, but RPG elements. It was crazy.
Yes. So this was a it was another Capcom side-scroll beat-em-up, which is already a recipe for success.
Yep, Capcom had that recipe.
Yeah, and it was kind of like it was Arthurian. So you could pick different characters. As you played through the game, you'd actually earn experience and level up, which didn't do a ton.
It changed the look, though.
It changed the look, and that was so cool.
Yeah.
So, like, I always played as this big, bad motherfucker, Percival, with, this big, badass axe.
Yeah.
Jake would always play as Lancelot.
I was also Lancelot. Yeah, okay.
And, so you would start with, this kind of, very basic, at least for Percival, you start with a super basic, almost berserker kit, which is just gray shoulder plate and stuff. And by the end of the game, every level it changes a little bit. And by the end, it's golden, it's covering your entire right side and a little bit of the left side. It's all spiky and cool as shit looking. This game was so fun.
Jesse, when you played Diablo 4 and you played as a barbarian, did you get Percival vibes from that armor that was the left side armor? Because that's what I always thought.
I've always loved that berserker style, that's just got armor on one side. There's a class in Fire Emblem that's one of my favorite classes for that reason as well.
Yeah, I love
Percival's actually why I like axe wielders in RPGs and stuff.
It's amazing game. Amazing, but that was
so good.
That was honestly, I think, my preferred beat 'em up overall because I was big into fantasy and swords and sorcery, and it was like Ninja Turtles except the RPG element. That is what set it apart for me from everything else, was the fact that as you went through the levels and you leveled up, your character looked more badass. That's just very cool. It's so basic. I love it. But let's go over to, I think Hunter Hendricks might disagree and have a different pick.
True. I
don't know why I said it like that.
I don't think I've mentioned. Have I mentioned a platformer to this point? Or Link to the Past, Mario Kart, RPG? No. So Donkey Kong Country.
Oh yeah.
And I know a lot of people prefer the second or even sometimes the third one,
First one.
Yes.
I never got past level 3, but I still like it.
Well, I get that the second one did some technical improvements. I understand that. But
then we're just not going to talk about the third one.
Yeah, no. But the ability to play as just Donkey Kong, and then Diddy Kong was a great new addition. It was the first time the games really looked like that, which was very cool.
Yeah.
The little secrets and hidden things that you could find. Mm. Yes, it was just unique and interesting, and especially for a character who I don't think anybody ever thought that was going to happen to. Right, Donkey Kong was very locked into a very specific kind of game.
He's the bad guy.
Yeah, and then it was fun just seeing him not have to do that.
Well, that's because Rare at that time was killing it, man. Between that and Killer Instinct, I mean, they were so innovative when it came to especially graphics. Like Killer Instinct and Donkey Kong, nothing looked like that. Nothing looked like that.
The original Donkey Kong Country 2 or Donkey Kong Country will also always kind of hold a specific place for me because it's the whole reason that I have an IMDb page. So I know we've talked about that here before, but it's such a roundabout thing, but I'm always like, yep, I owe a debt of gratitude to Donkey Kong
for that, so. Lindsay,
it's getting me through a great many two truths and a lie games.
Lindsay, you're number four, what do you got?
Number four is a cheat code, but you said I could do it, so I'm doing
I gave
it.
Permission, yeah.
But it's the Super Game Boy, because it allows you to play Pokemon on the TV from the original Game Boy cartridge.
I approved it.
Oh, yeah. That's fair. I did use that thing a lot.
Same. It was very, very cool.
And for the same reason. I played Pokemon on the TV too.
Honestly, for me, it was always it's not as good as the Super Nintendo version, but I played the shit out of Batman the Animated Series on Game Boy. I loved that game. Played it all the time. But yeah, the Super Game Boy, you can't really say much else about it. It literally just let you play Game Boy games on TV. Yeah. So that opens up a whole new world of a fly touching my nose while I'm trying to talk. I promise more Looney Tunes. I'm going to get it out of the way real quick. Bugs Bunny and Rabbit Rampage.
I don't remember that one.
This game blew me the fuck away. The graphics are so good. It looks like a cartoon. And everything about it played like a cartoon. It was a little slippery on the controls, but like, I can't recall a game that represented the source material so faithfully as Bugs Bunny Rabbit Rampage. The bad guy's Daffy Duck. It's, what was that cartoon where he was the animator and he kept like erasing things and drawing new stuff to fuck with Bugs? Yeah, it's basically that. Daffy Duck is drawing new stuff in there and fucking with you. It was really good. If you've never played Rabbit Rampage, highly recommended. I don't know how many people have heard of it. It's so good. They also had Daffy Duck in, what was he, Duck Dodgers? They had
the
Martian missions.
23rd and a half century.
Yeah, that was also good, but Rabbit Rampage is where it's at. Seriously, go play it. It's amazing. Jesse, last pick. And then then we'll do some honorable mentions.
Okay, yeah, good, because oh, do I have a few? Sam, my last pick though is going to be probably one of my favorite games of all time. Not just on the Super Nintendo, is Mega Man X.
Asa somewhere is smiling with pride.
Yeah, the game, like, yeah, because like as mentioned earlier, like we had a get together in Hunter's where Asa just like blew through that game, and yeah, every couple of years I'll do something similar. Apparently, Asa does it once every couple months.
I had never played it. It was on the SNES Classic, and you guys showed up when I was playing it, and Ace is like, oh, you gotta do the thing, go there. I'm like, all right, cool. Here, you do it real quick. And he's like, ah, okay, I guess. He sits down, and about an hour later he's like, all right, I'm done.
Yeah, beat the whole game.
What do you mean you're done? I beat the whole game. I got the Hadouken, I got it all. I'm done.
Yeah, beat the whole game, I did everything. Yeah. Yeah, he would have platinum.
Because getting the Hadouken is, like, that's something that even in my replays I don't fuck with, because, like, it's so irritating to get because you have to get every single little upgrade. And then even
when I watched.
You only use it. Yeah. For those out there, the only time you can use the Hadouken is if your health bar is completely full.
Yeah.
Granted, if it works, like, it's a one-shot kill on anything.
Yeah.
But so irritating.
That it reminded me of Legend of Zelda. Whenever, if Link was at full health, he could shoot the beams from his sword. Once I lost the beam sword, I stopped playing. I stopped caring.
It's like, this game is way less fun now.
Stupid.
So Mega Man X is just like an objectively perfect title for a platformer. Like, the controls are incredible. Like, the upgrades are really, really cool. And again, this is another one of those things. Like, I don't know what in my brain makes me feel this way. It was similar to the Knights of the Round. Like, whenever you got an upgrade, it would change how Mega Man looked, and it's just, there's something about that that's just very pleasing to my brain.
It also reinvented Mega Man because up to this point, it was, I think, Mega Man 6 was the last one on Super Nintendo, and Mega Man X came out, and all of a sudden it was a more mature storyline. There were new characters. It was very, very cool.
Six was NES.
You're right. Yeah, six was the last one on NES, and then it went to 7 on Super Nintendo. Yeah. Right?
I thought 7 was...
That'd be PlayStation. Now I'm curious.
Yeah, 7 was PlayStation. Yeah, Mega Man X was the first one on... They just did X, 1, 2,
No, 3 I was right. 7 was Super Nintendo. Thank God.
Oh, shit.
Woo!
I don't think I ever knew that.
8 was Genesis. I'm sorry, 8 PlayStation. Was PlayStation. I've been drinking through this entire show. I apologize.
And then they just released 9 recently, and that game is hard as balls.
And 10.
And 10. Both hard as shit. Mega Man X, though, it was so incredibly fun. It was so incredibly satisfying to play. Like the level design like really guides you through. At no point is there really a tutorial for it. It's just everything is very clear and obvious what you need to do. It puts you in situations where it's like, yes, this is how these controls work. It's so, so good, so much fun, and one of my favorite games of all time.
Jesse, keep that X in your head. It's going to come back here in a minute. Let's go to Hunter.
So I'm looking at, I have four things here, and I'm not going to list them all right now because we'll do that in a minute. But realistically, I'm realizing that there's only one of them that I actually, again, if I'm using this criteria, played on the SNES. One I played on an emulator, one was on the DS, and one was on the Virtual Console. So I'm going to go with what turns out to be kind of the weirder one, Super Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, I have, okay, I'll save it.
Yeah. So yeah. All three of those games are pretty great in their own right, if not extremely weird. But if you were a huge Star Wars fan in the early 90s, and hard as hell, if you were a huge Star Wars fan in the early 90s, and kind of reeling from the fact that you were growing up in an era when the movies were presumably over and not coming back, and yet the property was still brand new to you, you needed something to play. The great thing about Super Empire Strikes Back is that, like the other games, it also allows you to play through the story. But it's a video game, so you need shit to fight. So you get to do things like fight the carbonite freezing machine that freezes on. Or they put, like, a giant swamp monster on Dagobah that you have to kill.
Just like the cutscenes from the film.
Exactly. There's a huge ice monster that freezes you with his breath on Hoth.
I think that's just
years later. I don't think it was, man. I think it was another thing. I think you did have to fight the Wampa, but then there was like another thing too, if I remember correctly. I'm gonna have to look that up. But in any case, it was that thing where you go, this is just like the game, but better. Because I mean, it was kind of like playing with your Star Wars toys, you know?
Yeah.
And the movies are great, but you needed, oh my god, it was so difficult.
I can't stress that enough.
I'm only picking Empire Strikes Back because that was the one that I owned, and I don't even remember why I owned it. I don't remember buying that game. So someone either gifted it to me, or maybe when like Blockbuster was getting rid of stuff, we bought it from that. I don't know. I just know it was the only one that ever existed on my shelf. I played all three of them, but that was the one that I remember going back to multiple times and just desperately trying to get through. I don't know that I ever did it, frankly. I think if I did, it must have been there. I think there were cheat codes you could use to kind of like jump ahead and do stuff. But yeah, God, it was fun. I mean, when you were a Star Wars fan again in the 90s, you took whatever you could get before those prequels were announced, and this was very much that.
I'm going to go ahead and just, since you mentioned, I'm going to tack on one of my honorable mentions was Super Return of the Jedi. Actually, Empire Strikes Back was the only one I never got to play as a kid because the place where I rented my games from had Super Star Wars and Super Return of the Jedi, but not Super Empire Strikes Back. So I didn't get to play it until years later. But all of those games are fantastic. They're all really good. And hard.
I'm gonna go find out if that's the Wampa or if there's more to it. I have to know.
Well, while you're doing that, we're gonna go to Lindsay. Lindsay, what's your last pick?
My last pick is another Sailor Moon game. It is one of the two Sailor Moon S puzzle games. It's the one that they are cubes rather than heart-shaped balloons. I like both of the puzzle games, but the one with the cubes, I have literally gone through and beat it with every single character option. So
I've seen it. Yeah. Lindsay loves her puzzle games. In fact, one of the things I thought was like, I wonder why she didn't say Yoshi's Attack, but I think that was on 64, right?
Tetris Attack, it was on a different system.
Tetris Attack was Super Nintendo.
Was that
Super Nintendo?
I'm almost
Super Nintendo.
I think he's right.
It was.
Yeah, I think he's right. But that's another one.
I think it might have been re-released elsewhere, but it was definitely on the Super Nintendo.
Yeah. Point is
that was another one of those games that my mom loved those like Tetris.
Oh yeah, no, I put hours into Tetris Attack, definitely.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Mom would just regularly again, it was beat as an the emulator shit out of us with those games. Like Tetris Attack.
I sucked at Tetris Attack.
Bean Machine.
Never good at Tetris Attack. I was good at regular Tetris, but you know. Hey Jesse, can I tell you mine real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
My last one. I said bring that X back because it's Castlevania Dracula X.
I knew it.
One of the rarest Super Nintendo games out there, and I know a lot of people, if you are a big fan of the Super Nintendo, you're probably saying, why would you pick that over Super Castlevania 4? Super Castlevania 4 is the better game, no doubt, but I have fonder memories of Castlevania Dracula X. I used to rent it from a store in Cairo, and I absolutely loved that game. That was the first game that made me love Castlevania. The music was good. That first level, Richter's theme, Bloodlines, is one of the best songs in Castlevania history. The graphics were great, and that game was also really hard. The problem is that it was based on a game that had come out in Japan for the, I think, TurboGrafx or whatever the equivalent was in Japan, called Rondo of Blood. And so we got like a watered down version, so everybody compares the two, and it's of course not as good as that one. But if you take it on its own as just an old school level by level Castlevania game, it's really good. It's amazing. It's just really hard. I can say with pride that I've beaten this game. This is one of those games that I put on my wall as, oh yeah, I beat that, along with like Dark Souls and not Super Star Wars, because I never did beat them. I couldn't get past the last part. In Return of the Jedi, you got to fly the Millennium Falcon through the Death Star, and I couldn't do it. It was it was too hard. But yeah, Dracula X. All right, let's talk about some honorable mentions. I'll let you guys go first. I don't want to take any of yours because I have a couple. Hunter, go ahead. I'm sorry, Jesse, go ahead. My bad.
I was going to say, Jesse, do it. What he does, I put a picture of the thing that is the boss from Empire Strikes Back. It's listed as a giant Wampa creature, but look at that and tell me that's a fucking Wampa.
That's a demon.
That's not a Wampa.
That's Diablo. That's Ice Diablo. Yeah.
That's kind of wild.
Yeah.
Okay. See, I've got a few here, honorable mentions that I want to talk about. Mickey's Ultimate Challenge.
Good game.
What's a game that just, like, me and Jake loved as a kid? It was just, like, Mickey Mouse and puzzle games. And it was delightful. Earthworm Jim, Killer Instinct was my, like, that was our favorite fighting game as kids. Like, it was between that and, like, Ultimate World Combat 3. That's another one of those, you know, it's two players, so that was a common pickup for us, was fighting games and racing games and the like. Super Double Dragon didn't get mentioned. That's like one of the
I waited better, for you on that one. I didn't want to take that from you.
That's fair. Yeah, like it was between that and, I mean, that probably is number four to the three that I brought up there. Maybe tied with Battletoads and Battle Maniacs. That was another one that me and my little brother played a shitload of. And then the last one, Super Metroid.
Yeah.
I didn't play this as a kid. I didn't actually play it until I got the SNES Classic, like the SNES Mini or whatever. It was on there, and I was like, man, I never did play this game, and I love these games now. And holy fucking shit, that game holds up and is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
That is so much fun.
Probably the best Metroid game
Such
ever
a good
made.
Game.
Yeah. No, the Super Nintendo.
Metroid Prime exists, but.
Blew my mind. Yeah. Potatoes, tomatoes, you know?
Yeah, that's true. It's a very, very different game.
Hunter, what do you got?
So, a ton of mine got mentioned along the way, so I'm not going to try to remember them all because I was removing them. It's, you know, Mario World, Mario All Stars, all of that stuff. But the only two that have not been mentioned that I think are worth mentioning, again, one I played on an emulator and one I would play on the DS, actually, in order, that would respectively be Earthbound and Chrono Trigger, both of which were, of course, incredible RPGs, way ahead of their time, very unique games for two different reasons. Earthbound, you know, was not sci-fi, it wasn't high fantasy, it was just little kids dealing with things that little kids shouldn't have to deal with, and it was also like a metaphor for abortion and so many other things. It was crazy.
It was weird.
It was, man.
It is. I know. It's just
it's
weird.
It's what blows my mind that, like, people go, you know, it's what now? And then you go show them and they go, well, that's undefinably not it's what it is. It has to be that. Undeniably. What did I say? Undefinably? And then, you know, Chrono Trigger was doing the... I talked about this a lot, actually, in the second episode of the Inquest when I talked about Mass Effect, that Chrono Trigger was really pioneering the multiple endings, changing the world around you. Where Final Fantasy did some of that, Chrono Trigger leaned on it. Like, that was the entire point of the game, basically. Your choices have consequences. And the things that you do will change what happens in the future, in the past, etc. So, both just incredible games. I wish I had had a chance when they were on the SNES to play them like in that time, but I'm glad I got to eventually in general. So,
Lindsay.
My last couple would be the Sailor Moon Stars puzzle game as well, which is another one of the bubble pops. And then the Magic Knight's Ray Earth RPG I really enjoyed. It's literally just going through the TV series in comics and video game form, but I just like that universe.
I can dig that. I got a couple. A lot of mine were mentioned, but I do want to mention a couple of real standouts that I loved. Samurai Showdown, all of them. Surprisingly, this may take a couple people by surprise. NHL 96. I played so much NHL 96, it made me fall in love with hockey. Shadowrun, very strange RPG that had come out on Super Nintendo that a lot of people didn't mess with, but I loved. I'm surprised no one mentioned this one. Contra 3, The Alien Wars. That's just a classic.
I was also surprised Contra didn't come up.
Absolute classic. WWF, Royal Rumble. I love the Royal Rumble. Very basic. Also by LJN, by the way. Very basic game, but I really, really love that one. Ninja
the
Warriors.
One that had, Doink the Clown in it.
That was Raw. It was the same game. It was the same game. It's just Royal Rumble came out first. I mean, literally, it played the exact same. Raw was just a little bit better cleaned up, but Royal Rumble was the first one I played.
Because we played one of them that had like goofy cartoon animations would come out whenever like different characters would do their finishers.
That's Raw. Yeah, because they had the over the top finishers. Yep.
Undertaker had the ghosts and all that. I was away for a second. I want to quickly tack on. I wasn't watching wrestling at the time, so that's why I didn't mention any of the WWF games. And Contra, for whatever reason, I never played those until the classic, kind of like Jesse with Super Metroid. So that's why that never came up for me.
Last two, Ninja Warriors, really good side-scrolling beat-em-up. Absolutely love that. And then this game blew my mind as a kid, and I still love it. Lethal Enforcers. It came with the gun, the Justifier. The gun was called the Justifier, man. Come on, that's cool. And I'll never forget one day I got sick. I stayed home and I just played Lethal Enforcers all day, and I'll never get it out of my head. The guy going, "You can't shoot me." And I did. I shot many times. That's it. That's the end of the show. Hunter, before we get out of here really quick, can you please read off the names from the chat? Because they're going to change probably in the next day before we do horse time. And there's some classics.
They're probably going to change in the next hour.
Right.
So, yeah, because we start right out of the gate strong with Ace of Gray's name being Curry Piss. don't sleep on Cody Sandusky as Initiate Papaya. My name is currently Confetti Charlie.
Yeah.
Bob's is the name of his jazz album, Something About a Silent Duck. Jesse's might be my favorite because it sounds like his like terrible code name, and that's Mike Real Cat. Kaz's name is Early Stage Clown, which sounds like he's coming down with something. Shannon's is Space Arkansas.
Hell yeah.
Steven, I think, has not changed. He is still commercially unsuccessful Andy. Zach Kyrgus's name remains Ultrasight DeSantis.
Would you like me to read that last one off there?
I really like you to read Tanner's. Not that I don't want to, but I think it'll be funnier coming from you.
Tanner's nickname is Stinky Discharge from the Uwu Clan.
Oh.
And he doesn't know. He has no
Something
idea.
About a thrush.
Oh, jeebers. Okay, that's going to do it for us tonight. We'll be back tomorrow probably with an all-new horse time. If not,
damn it,
please go back and check out last night's episode of Barbie on Extras and Epilogues. We had a quote-unquote all-new After Dark to start the week off. That was a lot of fun. And then tomorrow will probably be horse time. Until then, until we see you guys again, please take care of yourselves. Life is precious. Enjoy it. Make memories for the love of fuck. We'll see you tomorrow. Jesse, you do the honors. Take us out.
Bye, everybody.
Hey, Jill.